for this week because last week we watched, we were exploring the career of Robert Lansing a bit, and I found the episode of Star Trek that he was in, Assignment Earth. And I was a little concerned that people would be mad at me because I didn't like it. But now we got some thumbs up on YouTube. I think that's not a controversial opinion, that that's not only not the greatest Star Trek episode, it's kind of not a Star Trek episode. It's just this pilot for Assignment Earth that has Spock and Kirk in it for some reason. So watching it, though, it gave me that desire to watch Star Trek. I didn't feel like I got that out of that episode because it really was like the least Star Trek episode of Star Trek that has ever been made, probably. So I thought this week, let's just go back and actually watch an episode of Star Trek. And because I already forget what it's called, Operation Earth, Assignment, because Assignment Earth was one of those like slip through the cracks episodes that, like, it seems like, especially you said you thought you'd seen all the Star Treks, but then there was just this random episode that you never saw. For me, this is a very famous episode, but I realized I'd never seen it. The one where they go into the mirror universe and they meet the evil versions of the Star Trek crew, the evil Kirk and the evil Spock and everybody. Like, I've always heard about that episode, but I've never seen it. So it's called Mirror Mirror. So I was like, why don't we just watch that? That sounds fun.
Okay, that's not the one with the reverse faces.
No, that's the half black, half white people. Yeah, and can't you see? You're both the same. No, this one I believe like kind of began the. It's like a trope now, or like a cliche that anytime there's an evil version of a character, they have to have like a little. What's that beard type called? Like Spock has it. It's like a goatee.
Oh, continue.
So yeah, like the evil version of a person is supposed to have a goatee, but again, I don't know anything about this episode. I'd only heard about it, and I've seen it parodied a lot that, the evil version of yourself shows up and then he has facial hair, and that's just how he's the evil one. That all came from this episode of Star Trek. But I've never seen it, so and I assume, yeah, it must have been a long time for you because it sounds like you don't remember it super well.
Yeah, I don't remember, but if I see it, I'll know if I saw it before.
And I mean, again, I just figure just because Assignment Earth was, it was like the least fun episode of Star Trek I've ever seen in my life. It was so bland and so boring.
Well, Assignment Earth was obviously a vehicle to introduce possibly a new show, and that's why it was so un-Star Trek like, because they were just kind of like the catalyst that was going to move this thing forward. And really, it wasn't a Star Trek story. It was a Gary Seven story.
Yeah, it's actually when I was thinking about it, it actually reminded me of we had an episode that we lost because we lost the recording, but it was the old show, The Time Tunnel. That's basically what Gary Seven was. It was this guy who goes back in time and he fixes things that could have gone wrong. So basically, that's all Assignment Earth sounded like. But yeah, just that it was if you made a list of most boring episodes of Star Trek, I mean, it's got to be up there. It's definitely a contender for most boring episode. So I was like, let's go the other way. There's no way the them going into the mirror universe and meeting evil Spock and evil Kirk. I mean, Kirk's already such a hammy actor. Evil Kirk is going to be amazing. What could be better than that? So yeah, let's just crank up the fun, get some Star Trek out of my system because yeah, I felt like a little frustrated last time that it's like I thought I'm watching Star Trek here. This isn't Star Trek. This is this is Assignment Earth. So this week we're for sure watching Star Trek.
All right, let's check her out.
We believe what you say, Captain Kirk, but our position has not altered. The Halcon Council cannot permit your Federation to mine dilithium crystals on our planet.
We have shown the Council historical proof that our missions are peaceful.
We accept that your Federation is benevolent at present, but the future is always in question.
So yeah, that was way more like it. That's a much more appropriately Star Trek episode of Star Trek.
I don't think I had seen that one before. I've seen that one like at the beginning when I said I've seen it, that planet with the dilithium on it. I think that there is another show where they actually go and get the mineral. That was excellent.
Yeah, and again, like I was saying, I think I mostly just knew it by reputation. So yeah, it's nice to finally see the actual original episode because yeah, it was pretty cool.
See, they tied it back to the original pilot, which has that Captain Christopher Pike in it. He's the old man, and it's like a reminiscence. I don't know if you must have seen that one. They tied that back right to the very beginning, that reference of the pilot show. And I don't know why Pike didn't become like Captain Kirk. There was something happened between the pilot and the first show where Jim Kirk becomes the main man there. But it was well done. What I always like about the original of Star Trek, it was pre-computer generation. So all this stuff was kind of done in a studio. And they always looked to me like they enjoyed making this show so much. They always have a little bit of humor kicked in there a little bit. And whereas Star Trek, the next Star Trek, is more serious. It was always so seriously minded. But this one, they just looked to me like everybody had just so much fun making it.
Yeah, I always hear sort of the descriptions of the different Star Treks, like Next Generation is like a flying office building. You know, everything's very well lit and everything is very, you know, prim and proper. And then it didn't last that long, but the one with Scott Bakula in it, what was it called? Just Enterprise or something? Anyway, that one's like a submarine style. It's like you're in an old school ship and it's like a submarine. Definitely the original is, though, the most like swashbuckling, the most, you know, just like fun action adventure version of Star Trek for sure. And I did like stuff like, it's just neat with like the evil versions of everybody, because it's a little on the nose, but I liked that if someone was going to not be all the way evil, it makes sense that it was Spock, you know, like that Spock even warns Kirk a little bit that he's gotten this message from Starfleet, you know, that he needs to inevitably kill him and stuff, you know. It's like, it's cool. It's a nice little, although I was kind of wondering if I was going to nitpick. I suppose Starfleet does involve more than Earth, right? It is like a whole consortium, because I can see an alternate reality where Earth is worse, you know, like, I don't know, just say like the Nazis won World War II and then we were just Nazis from then on and then we were Nazis in space, you know, whatever, something like that could happen. But why would the Vulcans also be evil? Like, did two different societies go bad in this alternate world? I guess so.
Except the Spock in the alter universe is not really evil. He fits in with the crew, but he's logical. He's got that logic problem. And he's not like out to kill people so that he can become the captain. He doesn't want to become the captain. He just wants to kind of make things move forward as they should move forward in a logical way. So because he doesn't have that emotion that the other guys have of where they're going to get ahead no matter what, and they're going to kill whoever gets in their way, which is the human condition, he doesn't have it. And that's why, yeah, it does make sense that if anybody's going to be the counterbalance between them, it's going to be that Spock character.
Yeah, I also liked how they really didn't bother splitting the show in half to deal with the ramifications of the evil away team arriving in the good universe, because they were just like, they're just too, like, the way that it does make sense that the good crew could fit into the evil world a little bit, because you wouldn't clue in right away that their protocols are different and their ideas are different, where, of course, you would recognize right away that evil Kirk, something is very wrong with him, and they just throw him in the brig. You know, I kind of like that. Like, we don't need to show you too much of this because they just got caught right away and they're in jail and that's fine. It's like, yeah, that is what would happen. There's no way, like, normal Kirk is so bombastic. There's no way evil Kirk would even be cool enough to realize the situation before he had given himself away. He's just going to show up and go off like a half-cocked cannon and be thrown in jail, you know?
Yeah, because he's got all that arrogance and brutality and I'm going to step on and kill whoever I need to keep ahead or to get ahead. So, yeah, that makes sense. And they said that. They said that the good people going in could immediately sense, because they'd be more calm and more reasonable. They could immediately sense that there was something that they had to kind of comply with. But the bad guys, no, they were just so into themselves and arrogant and pushy and controlling that, no, they'd never get it. They'd never be able to see beyond that hate that they have. It was well done.
I do like that about Kirk in general, too, like even both versions of Kirk, like even the normal version of Kirk, is that he's by far the least captain feeling of any captain in Star Trek. I mean, I haven't seen any of the more recent Star Trek shows, but, you know, basically all the captains from here on in, or commanders in Sisko's case, they're, you know, they're stuffed shirts. They do feel like commanders, but Kirk feels more like, it's a little surprising he's the one running the ship, but I do like that about him, because they're always running into some weird anomaly or some weird situation. Like, it does seem like you would want somebody who is a little more off the cuff to be able to roll with the punches of all the crazy crap that always happens to them, you know? Like, in some ways, Kirk, he's like the least believable and the most believable captain at the same time. Like, I don't know how he got that job, but now that he's got it, he kind of does seem like a better captain than the really stiff captains that they always had after this.
Well, there's that movie out about the young Kirk and the young Spock when they're in the academy.
Yeah, and isn't it that Kirk's the only one who beat the Hoshimaru test or whatever because he reprogrammed the computer or something?
Yeah, and right from the beginning in that movie, I thought they did a very good job of that. I thought I wouldn't like it, but I did. I thought they did a really good job of creating that character of a young man who just doesn't fly with the authority. He questions the authority, and he's got a spirit that where, you know, he doesn't necessarily feel he's got to take all the tests, and he's got that arrogance about him, which he knows better than authority. He's a bit of a renegade right from the beginning. So that fits with the kind of character you see when he is the captain of the fleet here. And all the way through, when you see William Shatner playing the part, he always plays that part of being able to not just kowtow because somebody told him to do something. He questions whether it should be or should not be. So he is a different character because he doesn't comply, and he never did right from the beginning.
Yeah, I remember the only thing, it's been a while since I've seen it, but that J.J. Abrams movie, the only part of that that I remember really having a sort of a problem with is how they introduced Leonard Nimoy into it, you know, the alternate timeline Spock.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was kind of weird.
Yeah, it was clear that they only got him on board later on in the process, not when they were writing the early script, because, yeah, they just are stranded on an ice planet and they just happen to find him in an ice cave.
Yeah.
I'm like, what the hell is Spock doing in the ice cave? Like, that made no sense. It was cool to see him. It was neat that he was in the movie. It was just how they introduced him made no sense at all. But yeah, speaking of Shatner, you know, he is kind of famous these days for his particular staccato kind of acting, but he doesn't really do it that often. But he does sometimes, like the way people parody Shatner's acting, it's only occasionally, but he does break into it sometimes. Like if you isolate all of his worst moments, he really does act like this. <You know>? But it's not that often.
But he started out as a stage actor in Canada. And yeah, so that intensity that you would have to do on the stage as opposed to TV, he carries that forward, yes. And sometimes it is a little dramatic.
You know who was really good, though? If they were going to pick, an especially evil person on the Mirror Universe crew, Sulu was a good choice. George Takei did a great job. Like, he really seemed believable as an evil guy, more believable than he does as a good guy.
Yeah. And, of course, they put a little bit of grease on his face, you know, to make him look kind of sweaty and... And then, of course, the big scar coming down the full length of his face, because he's such a sweet guy when he's good, the good guy, good Sulu. He is. He's so sweet. And he has a very limited character range. So, yeah, as a bad guy, he was much better than Chekhov.
Yeah, maybe it would have seemed a little on the nose, too, if they made the Russian guy be extra evil. You know, so maybe they were like, yeah, let's do Sulu instead. One thing that's a little weird that I noticed, I mean, I guess, you know, you can't really nitpick a story like this too much because it's weirdly believable, you know, that Earth would just go down a dark path and would just have a bad history. But it is strange that the exact same people would all be crewing the exact same ship, but you just kind of got to hand wave that one. It's like, okay, well, that's just how it is because, you know, it's a TV show. But it is weird that they switched clothes, you know? Like, I can understand the idea that particles between dimensions got mixed up during a teleportation accident. But for the teleporter to also specifically pick all of the atoms of the clothing off of one group and put them on the other, that's too much. That's like, that wouldn't happen.
So you just have to suspend belief in, obviously, because if they had shown up in their good clothes, yes, they would have been suspected right away. So yeah, whoever was working the show at the time said, now, wait a minute, we got to do something about these clothes. Because if they come dressed in different clothes than when they left here, everybody's going to know right from the get-go that something's up. So you have to suspend disbelief, obviously.
It is kind of funny to think, too, that if Evil Kirk had been a little more level-headed, that was his opportunity to realize something was wrong. You know, if he had teleported in and immediately noticed that his away team was wearing different clothes, maybe he could have, relaxed for a second, taken in the situation and maybe fooled them for a little bit. But yeah, you can just imagine that scene. Like, they didn't even need to show it. But it was cool too with the other uniforms. I just was so impressed with Uhura's abs, because this, like, this era where nowadays every single male actor looks like a fitness model. You know, everyone is muscular and no body fat and whatever. Back in that era, you know, it's not like they were in bad shape, but they're not in amazing shape. They're just in, you know, slightly above average shape. But Uhura was in, like, incredible shape. I don't know if I've seen abs better than that. It's been a while, you know, just like, so I mean, it must have been almost kind of like, I wonder if that was neat for her in some ways of like, oh, cool, I get to do this one episode where these abs that I killed myself developing actually get to be on TV.
Yeah, I wonder how she felt, because apparently when the show first started and she was wearing that little tiny, tiny skirt that would just barely cover her bum, she felt very uncomfortable in that attire. As she became an older actress, she commented on the sexism in the original Star Trek shows that, yeah, these, all the women, I mean, they didn't show their boobs and everything, but they certainly showed their bums and they just barely covered themselves. And she said it was obviously a very sexy move. And so here she is again with the abs showing.
Yeah, so I guess I'm probably not seeing it. I'm seeing it from a male perspective, I guess. Yeah, I'm sure maybe it wasn't so great to wear that outfit. They did do a thing where it was very silly to think that people in the 24th century would dress like that, you know? So they tried to explain it away a little bit in Next Generation, where eventually they just put everybody in pantsuits in the later seasons. But in the really early episodes, they actually had some of the men wearing those skirts to show that it's a unisex society and you're allowed to dress however you want in the future, which is how it's going to be in the future, and it makes more sense. But at that point, it's like they just had backed themselves into a corner with the way that the old uniforms were, and they were just desperately trying to update the show, and that was pretty weird.
And it must have been a thing of the times, though, because remember the British show we saw, the space show just recently, Space Maidens?
Oh, yeah, Star Maidens.
Star Maidens. Here again, this is a planet that is run by women. They're in complete control, and the men are being dominated big time. But yet the women are going around in very short little skirts and bare midriffs, and the men are quite covered compared to the women. And I commented at the time, I said, you know, you'd think you'd have the men with very few clothes on showing off their muscles and everything else, and the women very well clothed, because they're beyond that sex thing. But not in that show.
Yeah, which I guess that also, one of my little things I noticed with the episode, that I guess it's one of these things you don't think about with Star Trek until you start to, you know, think about it more, is the lady in the evil side who is in Kirk's quarters and, you know, he's like hanging out with for a big chunk of the episode. I was thinking how that would have been cooler if that was a character we knew from the good side, you know, if it was someone we had previously established as a crew member. But then I was like trying to run it through my head and I'm like, but there are none. There's only Uhura. There's no other female characters in Star Trek that I can think of. So what can you do?
Later, there is a doctor who works with Dr. McCoy. She's blonde. I don't know what her name is. She wears the blue uniform and everything. But she probably was not in these shows that early on.
Yeah, and also I really liked the logo for the evil Federation, how it's basically the planet Earth with a giant sword through it.
Yeah.
It's such a neat logo because on the surface, it's like, wow, that's cool. That's a badass logo. But it's almost like the people who made it didn't realize that it also implies that they've like stabbed themselves. You know, they've run a giant blade through their own society. So what a cool logo.
And of course, their greeting is basically the Nazi greeting, except that they thump their chest and then the arm goes out.
And I also liked the fight scene with Spock at the end, how they just barely beat him. Because, yeah, like that's what would happen. It doesn't matter if you got four or five humans, you know, this is Spock. You're not going to beat that guy. And then they just barely take him down. So, yeah, that was cool as well.
Yeah, it was a pretty exciting show. Well done. Well done. Very well done. It holds up. After all these years, it definitely holds up.
Yeah, definitely a nice counterpoint to, yeah, just to kind of clear things up from last week. Because, yeah, I felt so unsatisfied with the one that we watched. You know, the one last week, it was an interesting artifact of a pilot for a show that never got made. But yeah, it sort of felt like we didn't watch Star Trek. So now I totally do feel like we watched Star Trek.
I'm surprised that it does not stand up as, like, there's certain ones that immediately, as soon as you think of Star Trek, they come to mind, like the black and white face reverse, the one where the living alien is, looks like a big rock that looks like a piece of pizza. You know, there's those ones that stand up. This one does not stand out in my mind as one of the top ones, but it should. It should. It's really excellent.
Yeah, and I think that's a little different where it does stand out in my mind. It's always one of the first ones I think of is the goatee evil version, even though, like I said, I'd never actually seen it because I guess the difference was when you were watching them as they first came out, I only saw them all as reruns. So I've seen so many references to this episode, you know, like so many. I can't even count them. Like every single cartoon ever has done a parody about the evil universe, you know, and then even Star Trek itself started going, they have so much less restraint now also. Like maybe if Star Trek had lasted more seasons, they would have gone back to the mirror universe, but they only went the one time where they went like five times in Deep Space Nine and in the newer shows. Yeah, they just keep going back. Like the mirror universe is a whole other place. You know, they just can't help it because it's like low hanging fruit. Every time they go to an evil version of the current world, everyone's like, oh, cool, we're going back to the evil world. So they just keep doing it. Even like the Buffy, where they go to the evil Sunnydale with evil Xander and evil Willow. Like, I feel like all of these evil version episodes are all based on this Star Trek. So it is a famous one to me because it's just been referenced other places for decades.
I can see why Star Trek in 1966, when it entered the television scene, was such a landmark piece of viewing and so popular with, everybody, but especially the youth of the day. I mean, just loved this show. And here it is 50 years later, and it still holds up wonderfully.
I'm glad to like actually properly watch it because, you know, with my just knowing the cliche of it, I was a little surprised that it was only Spock who had a goatee. I thought like Kirk was going to have like a little pencil mustache and Sulu would have a Fu Manchu. And then they showed Chekhov and he didn't have any differences. And I'm like, shouldn't he have long hair or something? Like, I thought everybody was going to have some kind of, like, you know, weird thing to show that they're the evil version. And they didn't necessarily. So It was a little more subdued than the version in my brain.
I suppose they only did the Spock one, though, because the two characters were not that different, because they have the logic going for them. So to maybe just put a new shirt on Spock was not enough. They felt they really had to do something to make him stand out as opposed to the guy on the other ship who was the good guy. But I'm telling you, that goatee and mustache, boy, really enhances his look. I agree with McCoy at the end when he says, I think I liked him better with the beard. Oh, yeah, that beard made him look, he's positively handsome. He's a real hunk.
That's also where I do feel like writers nowadays kind of get up their own butt so far. Because that's one thing I was thinking is, like, I bet nowadays if you wrote this, you'd have an episode where evil Spock comes to the normal world, and then the two Spocks could, like, sit down and discuss what facial hair is most logical, you know, or something stupid like that. That's I can just imagine a room full of, you know, nerdy writers like, oh, that's so funny, we should do that. It's kind of nice to have the old style where they're like, no, we're not, you know, we don't need to get that deep into everything. Because, like, they got so weird with, like Deep Space Nine, like, went back to the Tribbles, you know, they like brought back the Tribble episode, or there's like a Star Trek where they explain why the Klingons look different in the original series, that there was like a genetic disease. Like, they just, it's like they can't help themselves. They have to over examine and over explain every little thing. It's like, sometimes you just got to let it go, man. It's not worth it.
And that's exactly what we have to do in this show when the clothes changed, when they were doing the transition from one dimension to the other dimension. Yeah, their clothes changed too. Yeah, okay. You just accept that. Sure, of course they did. You don't question it.
Medical log supplemental. Major Kira and I are returning home after opening the hospital on New Bajor, the first Bajoran colony in the Gamma Quadrant.
Could you take it for a while?
Sure. Do you mind if I listen to some music?
Actually, I do. I was hoping to meditate for a few minutes.
Of course.
So we've been on a bit of a Star Trek kick lately, where we watched Assignment Earth, and then we watched the Mirror Mirror episode. And this one, I don't know how well this is going to go. We'll see. But I just was so curious, I had to know. So obviously, the Mirror Mirror episode that we watched last episode was where, through a transporter accident, some of the crew, including Captain Kirk, are teleported to an alternate version of reality where the Federation is the evil Federation. And, you know, the way you advance, kind of like Klingons, you know, it's like the way Sulu's going to become captain by killing Kirk, and Chekhov's going to become Sulu by killing Sulu, you know, just evil. And the only person who was still reasonable enough was Spock. So apparently, they went back to the Mirror Universe in Deep Space Nine. So there was the original series, and then there was the Next Generation, and then there was Deep Space Nine. And I do feel like Deep Space Nine is where kind of a lot of people fell off, you know. The first two series were both very popular in the mainstream, where by Deep Space Nine, you kind of had to be a pretty big Star Trek fan to still be paying attention. And I know a little bit about Deep Space Nine because when I worked at a comic store, that's when the DVDs first came out. So I saw the whole first season because the guy who owned the comic store bought them. So I've got a little bit of grounding with Deep Space Nine. But I assume you probably don't know jack or crap about Deep Space Nine.
No, never caught my fancy. I remember watching a show or two of it, but it never interested me.
It seems like one of those shows, again, I only saw the first season. People always say it gets better and better, but it does seem like it was tricky, like a good thing and a bad thing, that you couldn't really just jump in, you know, like the way you can just watch an episode. And with the next show, Voyager, they went back to that formula of you could just jump in and watch Adventure of the Week. And, you know, you didn't have to be in for the long haul, where Deep Space Nine seems like it was like a big sprawling 7-season narrative, you know, that I'm sure it is pretty cool. I do really like the captain, Benjamin Sisko, because he's like a nice mix of, you know, the way we were talking about how Kirk is the, you know, rambunctious captain and Picard is the stately captain. Sisko was kind of like both. Like, he still had the authority of Picard, but he was much more playful, you know, so he had some Kirk in him too. He was pretty cool. And Odo, he is Rene, what's his name? Rene Aubergeois, whatever, the guy from Benson.
Yeah, I know who you mean.
We saw him recently in McCabe and Mrs. Miller. He's the security chief. So he was pretty cool. Like, it definitely seemed like a good show. But yeah, I just never got deep into it. But in this episode where they go to the Mirror Universe, Deep Space Nine takes place 100 years after the original series. So what seems neat is that even if we don't know much about what's going on with the actual Deep Space Nine stuff, apparently it follows on from that world where that speech Kirk gave at the end, where he's like, don't you see, power doesn't come from backstabbing, power comes from friendliness and togetherness. You know, he said it better than that, but you know, he was trying to show them a better way. Apparently it kind of worked a little bit, but now that it's 100 years later, all that it ended up doing, from what I saw from a summary, apparently, is it weakened the Human Federation. They weren't such backstabbers anymore, so it just let the Romulans and the Klingons chew them up and eat them for lunch. So I thought this would be a neat episode to watch, because we get to go check in on the Mirror Universe and see how apparently things have gotten worse for humans because Kirk told them to stop being so evil, and maybe he shouldn't have. So I don't know. That seems kind of cool. But yeah, I guess basically just to give you the basics, again, the little I understand of Deep Space Nine is just that the concept of this show was, instead of being on a starship and going from place to place and planet to planet and, you know, going out to find adventure, in Deep Space Nine, there's these aliens called the Cardassians, who you'll be able to recognize because they have crazy bumps all over their heads. They have a thing on their forehead that looks like a spoon. And they're basically space Nazis. You know, they're the worst. They're subjugating everyone. So in Deep Space Nine, they've reclaimed this space station from the Cardassians. So it's not a human space station. It's all weird and alien, but the Federation owns it now. So the whole show takes place on this one space station near a wormhole. So people come through the wormhole sometimes. But I think that's also where this show is maybe a harder sell for people to just tune into casually, because you're not going from adventure to adventure. You're just always on the space station and like the boiling, you know, pressure cooker of this space station for 7 years. A very bold idea for a show. But that's basically all I know. So that's all I can really tell you. But this is from season two. It is early in the show. So we might not need to know too much more than that. You know, they're just on this space station trying to maintain order in this section of this quadrant of the galaxy. But in this particular episode, they somehow go to the Mirror Universe. So we get to see the evil version.
Oh, okay. Right.
So let's keep our eyes peeled for goatees, you know? That's how we'll know who's evil.
Okay.
It may sound like an odd question, but could you tell us where we are?
This is the Terek Nor Station, the center of authority for the Bajoran sector.
Center of authority? Whose authority?
The Alliance, of course.
Something is very wrong here. I think we took a wrong turn in the wormhole.
Wormhole.
So I was just thinking, maybe I'll just, because I haven't actually put out last week's episode yet about Mirror Mirror, I'm still editing it. Why don't I just add this onto the end? You know, like, I'll just make it part of that episode, because I feel like we just don't know enough about Deep Space Nine. We're probably not going to have anything particularly relevant to contribute.
Yeah.
So this will just be a little bonus bit at the end of that episode, the follow-up to the Mirror Mirror. Because, yeah, basically, my first thought was, I used to always have this thought, especially as Star Trek got longer and longer in the tooth and they kept putting out more and more Star Trek shows I didn't care about. I was like, why don't they make a show that's just about Klingons or about Romulans? Like, that would be cool to just be on a Klingon ship every week and see how that works. But I feel like maybe this is an example of how that might not be the best idea in the world, because everyone being evil, you know, that's a concept that runs short very, very fast, you know?
Besides, these weren't people that were as black and white evil as the original show that we saw from the original Star Trek. I mean, those were clearly people that were alter egos of these people. These people weren't. These people were just people who were, you know, power struggle going on in their world.
The little that I know of them, yeah, like Sisko laughed more, But ultimately, he's still deep down, he was still the captain or the commander. O'Brien was the same. Odo was basically the same. Garak was the same. And Kira, you know, I guess the episode was really all based around her. And she was, you know, chewing the scenery, but not in the same way that evil Sulu did. You know, like, she's just, like, got her sassy walk and sashaying around. And she can't sit in a chair normal. She has to recline all feline. And then she's taking a bath. And, like, you kept hearing the creak of her leather clothes. Like, that was just, like, you know, the first draft of an evil character.
And they kept immediately accepting the other side, and that the other side had these other traits. It wasn't like in the first Star Trek one. I mean, those people were just downright evil. Like, they were just bad. They didn't have good thoughts in their mind. These people, all they kind of had, you know, they didn't have to go down very deep before they could get help, or they could, people understood their side of the story. In the original one, hey, there was none of that. It was just like, you know what? You're a freaking pig and I hate you and I'm going to kill you. And that was, it was just like clear black and white. This was so gray in there.
I liked stuff like, it's neat that Kira, being a Bajoran, doesn't know who Kirk is, but the Julian dude, you know, he's a human. He knows Kirk, you know, there's little things like that that were cool. But yeah, I guess even the fundamentals of it are, I don't know, it's like, it's just not as compelling. It's neat that there's this consortium of bad guys. That's kind of cool. But what exactly am I supposed to sink my teeth into about this world? Or, like, I guess, what was the point in? Like, this is always weird when somebody comes in and rewrites someone else's stuff. Clearly, the intention of the Mirror Mirror episode was that Kirk's speech was to help things, you know? Kirk getting evil Spock's ear was clearly supposed to be for the betterment. Like, that was the whole Gene Roddenberry thing, was it's a future space utopia in some ways. You know, everyone is good. Everyone gets along. It works. Why did these writers come in and decide, oh, yeah, you know what? Actually, Kirk's speech did work, and Spock turned things around in the Mirror Universe, and it made everything worse. Like, why? What is the moral of that story? What is the point of that story? Like, even though maybe you could say original Star Trek was maybe a little optimistic, but that's what's good about it. You know, yeah, like you were saying about the grayness, everything doesn't have to be so murky. And even on a literal sense, how come if you're from an evil world, you don't want to clearly see things? Why is it such dim lighting with mood mist everywhere? Like, it's just very corny in a different way. Like, old Star Trek could be corny sometimes, but in a way that at least had a message and had a point. Yeah, I do feel like Deep Space Nine is the beginning of the moral gray murkiness for sure. And yeah, it's just not as fun to watch.